CheersCast is part of the Fire and Water Network.
But you know, success does have its price tag. He's been away from his wife, Valerie, for the better part of a year. Jeez, you know, I think I'd go crazy if I was away from Lilith for that long. I don't even like to think about it.
Well,
I do think about it. I don't enjoy it.
Sure not.
Well, I do enjoy it. I'm not proud of the fact.
You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to CheersCast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining us once more for the Season 7 finale, the co-host of Jeff and Rick Presents, please welcome back Rick Heineken. What's up, buddy?
Not too much. I am on vacation. I'm not working today. Yes, you got me to do this early in the morning again, but I'm not working today, so it's all good. I'm on vacation, about to head off to Costa Rica with my daughter for a school trip, so I'm doing pretty good, you know?
I hope that the socks you have packed are not full of holes at the toes or anything like that.
Yes, I've made sure that my socks are nice and complete, and I'm only going to be gone 8 days. So I think I should be faithful. Yes. I did want to start off, though, because I did mention that this is early in the morning, and you've done this to me before where we've done a recording early in the morning, and
I've never twisted your arm. You made me say, this to you.
I'm sorry. That was the wrong turn of phrase there. Some would say it's too early in the morning to drink beer, and I think that that's correct. So I think that instead this morning, I think I'm going to go for a nice brandy. Okay. Because I think that that's what we need. We've got the vacation starting, and, you know, it may not be the best cognac that Nigeria has ever produced, but it is a very, very ancient bottle of almost empty and probably past the goodbye date that was bottled in San Jose, California. So about the same. The house blend, if you will.
Bottoms up.
Bottoms up. Oh, I hope. Nothing like brandy at 10 o'clock in the morning. There we go.
Yes, and then while Rick savors that, people, let me tell you about this episode. As I mentioned, this is the last episode of Season 7, Episode 22, The Visiting Lecher, or as I would have titled it if it was my choice, The Joy of Gaslighting.
Oh, well played, sir. Well played. I was going to bring that up, yes.
This one is written by David Lloyd, directed by James Burrows, and the original air date was Thursday, May 4th, 1989. May the 4th be with you, back before that was really a thing. One of Frasier's colleagues, no, not Dr. Sheila Rydell, no, not Professor Bennett Ludlow, no, not Dr. Simon Finch Royce, a different colleague, Dr. Lawrence Crandall, a specialist in human sexual behavior, swings through Boston to promote his book on marital fidelity. He meets Frasier at Cheers and is introduced to Sam and Rebecca. Later, when Crandall is alone with Rebecca, he asks her if there was a spark of attraction between them when they first met. Rebecca assures him there wasn't, but the doctor persists, his keen training in this particular field convincing him that Rebecca desires him. She rejects him quite emphatically. She tells Sam and Frasier that Crandall came on to her. They insist that she misread the situation. When Rebecca apologizes to Crandall for her mistake, he comes on even stronger, rubbing his foot against her leg. Later that night, Rebecca goes to Crandall's hotel room, sneaking Sam into the closet in hopes that Sam will overhear Crandall admit that he was hitting on her and prove that Rebecca wasn't imagining it. Sam misses the confession, though, because he is busy with the chambermaid that Crandall had hidden in the closet. Crandall tries to deny anything was going on with the maid until a violinist comes to the hotel room. At last, the champion of marital fidelity comes clean to Rebecca and Sam. But then Crandall's wife Valerie shows up. Sam, Rebecca, the maid, and the violin player hide in the closet, but they are soon discovered by Valerie. Rebecca tells her the truth of her lecherous husband's behavior. But Valerie dismisses and excuses all of his suspicious acts until a frantic Rebecca lashes out at the couple, forcing Sam, the maid, and the violinist to carry her out of the room, screaming threats and accusations. Alrighty. So, as we lightly just touched on, this is one of those episodes. First of all, I think this is a hilarious episode. but it is also an episode that, by today's standards, saying this is problematic would be putting it lightly.
Ooh, just a bit.
Yeah, I mean, this episode is all about dealing with men obviously overstepping their bounds, engaging in flirtatious acts and hitting on women, trying to use positions of authority, in this case, more academic or intellectual authority, to convince or as I mentioned, gaslight, potentially fool a woman into being more receptive, more open romantically or sexually, denying it. Another factor or a concept of like men kind of grouping together and not believing women when mm-hmm. these types of accusations come out, being overprotective of their own kind, even when it's clear that their behavior is wrong.
Women against women.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That we see that at the end.
There's a bit of classism and elitism in there as well, and using those as positions to deny or demean somebody from their position or thoughts.
Right. On the other hand, I certainly didn't want a woman's opinion on this episode to bring me down.
There may have been a text last night where I said, you know, we are the wrong people to really be talking about this episode.
Perhaps. But we will forge ahead anyway. We will do our best. And the other thing that I'll put forth at the beginning of this one, this is my Cliffies. It's a little known fact, and we'll just kind of get into some of the background info for this episode before we dive into the meat of it. This episode was originally conceived as a return appearance of John Cleese's character, Dr. Simon Finch Royce, who counseled Sam and Diane to not get married back in season 5. A friend of our podcast and former guest John Trumbull actually asked series writer Ken Levine about this episode on Levine's blog. And Levine passed the question off to another one of the writers and producers on the show, David Lee. And this was David Lee's response on Ken Levine's blog to John Trumbull's question. If you can follow that. David Lee wrote, "The script was written by David Lloyd and was originally intended as a vehicle for the John Cleese character, Dr. Simon Finch Royce. Mr. Cleese had expressed an interest in returning to the show, and everyone was thrilled that he was interested in coming back to revisit the character. A story was broken specifically for him, and David went enthusiastically to work. A great script resulted and was put into the production schedule. Shortly before they were scheduled to go into rehearsal, Mr. Cleese's people called up to inform us that he was, as I remember, in quotes, too tired or something, and would not be doing the episode. It was quickly rewritten. If you know Mr. Lloyd, you can imagine what he had to say about that. And John McMartin was hired to play Dr. Lawrence Crandall, who, if you look closely, is very, very similar to Dr. Finch Royce. It turned out to be a fine episode, but the once fondly remembered name of Mr. Cleese was, how shall we put this, not." So,
I am very curious to know how much of this script was the one that they had. Mm-hmm. Because it could possibly have been that Cleese looked at it and said, I don't want to do this.
In terms of similarities of characters, we know that in John Cleese's former performance, we didn't see his wife, but he was on the phone with her, and mm-hmm. they seemed to be happily married, and he was, you know, a marriage specialist, counselor in this. So the idea of him being on a book tour for this particular topic would make sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what the deviations were. It would have been interesting to see if it was still more or less about him trying to seduce Rebecca.
If nothing, I can see, with a few exceptions in this one, how the character as it's portrayed in this show is given a lot more gravitas or a lot more respect for somebody who's just coming into the bar. Sam seems to take a liking to him extremely quickly. Mm-hmm. I think if that it was a return guest, I think if it was a return person that he had seen before, I think that would make a lot more sense about why Sam and Fraser were so easily willing to back this guy up and believe what he says.
And, I mean, they would have certainly had a joke about the fact that Sam and Diane did not end up getting married, and I'm sure that would have come up when they talked about it. But getting into the episode, when we come to our teaser, Cliff comes in as normal, Except what is not normal is Carla welcomes him very warmly. She's like, welcome, Mr. Clavin, to our humble bar. And Cliff tenses up. You see him almost do like a stutter step. Like he's got his defenses. Like he's like ready to run or something. He's like, it's a trick, isn't it? You're going to hurt me. Like, why is she being nice to him?
You're waiting for the other shoe to drop. He's waiting for it to drop. He's not that much of an idiot. No. He knows, like, no, this is a setup. This has got to be a setup.
Yeah. And they're pointing out that her behavior is really weird. She's being nice. Norm says that she has poured him 3 beers, which I counted all 3 of those for his tab.
Excellent.
She poured him 3 beers without flicking foam at his nose the whole time. And Woody's like, she hasn't spit on anybody.
She's spit on nobody.
Yeah. And Sam's like, is it problems at home? What's wrong, kid? She mentions that she went to Madame Lazaro, who I think she has mentioned by name before. Mm-hmm. Madame Lazaro, we'll actually see Madame Lazaro in the future of the show. I believe she has mentioned her by name at this point. And because Woody's like, is that your fortune teller? She's like, my palmist.
Yeah. Palmist.
Yes. And she has a decision. She has like 3 or 4 different people in this particular field. Mm-hmm. Madame Lazaro told her that her courtesy to others would result in great wealth for her. So Carla's decided for the rest of the night she is just going to be overly generous, overly nice, kind of unabashedly friendly with all of the usuals. And she even mentions, like, the bigger the jackass, the nicer she is going to be.
What she said, that she's not going to insult anybody unless they don't realize that I am insulting them. And then she says, the bigger the jackass, the nicer I will be. Might as well start with numero uno. And she serves Cliff, who smiles because he doesn't get it.
Because he doesn't get it. Hence,
like, it's a very subtle joke. And actually, I caught it better the second time around.
Yeah.
Because I was like, wait, oh, this is actually pretty good.
Yeah, because she's like, it is an honor to serve. And Cliff kind of gives a knowing nod to Norm. He's like, see, she likes you. She's going to be nice to me. And Norm is
and
like.
And Norm does the rolling of the eyes. He's like, yeah, okay. Yeah.
He's like, you missed that part. So once we come back from the opening credits, Frasier comes in. Or I know Frasier's already at the bar. Rebecca comes in and sits down next to him to get a bottle of water from Sam. And Frasier tells them that he is meeting this colleague, Dr. Lawrence Crandall, who mentioned earlier is played by John McMartin. This guy appeared in All the President's Men, one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. Brubaker, he was in Blowout. He was in the Madonna movie, Who's That Girl? As well as tons of TV appearances in The Bob Newhart Show, The Rockford Files, Beauty and the Beast, Spin City, and even an episode of Frasier. So Frasier tells them that Dr. Crandall, who has written this bestseller on marriage advice, it's called The Forever Couple, The Joy of Loving One Person for the Rest of Your Life.
And Norm's line is, science fiction, I hear that sells well.
And Frasier, of course, claims that he is not jealous of this success, but he obviously is. He calls Crandall successful. That is, if you measure success by dollars and cents and popularity and personal fame.
So, all those. So what's the book about? Well, who gives a damn?
Who gives a damn? Who gives a damn? And they mention that Crandall has been away from his wife for a whole year. And Frasier's like, I don't even like to think. Imagine going that long without Lilith. Well, all right, I do think about it.
I would go crazy being away from Lilith. Yeah, I don't think about it.
Yeah.
Well, I do think about it.
But I don't enjoy it. All right, I do enjoy it a little bit. But I'm not proud of that.
It's right. A very good deconstruction. Frasier's got some good lines in this one. He really does.
He does. He's only in it in the beginning, but it's good. He's got some good parts. So Crandall comes in. He meets Rebecca and Sam. He actually remembers Sam from pitching. He mentioned that he knows that Sam struck out Reggie Jackson one time, and Jackson paid Sam back by knocking him off the mound with a line drive the next time he was at bat. And yeah, so this whole thing, he's been on this tour, but he didn't bring his wife with him because she doesn't like to travel, and it's been a test for his theory on marital fidelity. And he says, after 10 months of celibacy, I am happy to pronounce my theory sound. And Sam responds with,
after 10 months, I could not pronounce my name.
And he says that the book has been received well. His last review is so embarrassingly glowing that he should just throw it away. But instead, he wants to make, 1,000 copies.
You missed one thing. He says that his wife, when she calls, he tells her that you're my world, you're my life, I love you. And Norm's response was, well, I think my wife would love to hear those words. Can you give her a call? Yeah. It's just down the bar, like, and just absolutely ignored. But it was a good one.
Yeah. Crandall wants to make copies of the review or whatever, so he asks if he can use a fax machine. And Rebecca's like, yeah, you can use the one in the office. He's like, any special instructions? She's like, nope, just press the blue button. It's right next to the sign that says this machine is for copying documents, not your butt.
Nobody blinks an eye that sign would be in the Cheers bar.
We cut to, like, a few minutes later. He's done. She comes into the office, and they're kind of alone, and he's thankful for her. And he's about to walk out, and he stops, and he seemingly very delicately kind of asks Rebecca if there was a spark of interest between them when they first met. And he's like, I only ask because this is my field, human sexual dynamics. Like, I'm kind of hypersensitive to this type of thing. And he was just picking up on something from her. He's like, was I imagining that? And she's like, yep. She's like, nothing, there was nothing there. And he's like, okay, so he's going to leave. He's like, you understand?
And that would be fine.
That would be fine. If he left it there. Yeah. And he's like, you understand, I wasn't judging. And as soon as he's saying that, now it's coming off a little bit more accusatory.
And you can tell Rebecca, Christy Alley does a great job of showing that her antenna are up now.
Yeah.
She has been around this block many times. I mean, especially with Sam, you know, but
sure,
Sam is,
yeah, yeah.
To be fair, Sam, it's playful. And this is somebody who is, she doesn't know.
Right.
He's in her space, right. Her antenna up, and you can see that on her face.
Yeah, yeah, she's got her defense up, and he's kind of coming back at her. He thinks that her denial is sort of like facile and that subconsciously she's into him, and she insists that she feels zero interest when they met or since then. And she's like, zero, nada, zip. And he's like, zip. Interesting unconscious choice of words. And the look on her face, like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, what the hell? So she gets him out of there for the last time, because he'd come back at her like three times with this sort of heavy, well, it turns into sort of heavy-handed kind of, again, trying to insist that this is all her idea, that she's really the one into him. But she's like, nope, get out. And there's a knock at the door. She thinks he's coming back again for the fourth time. She's like, I give up. You make me crazy with desire, and I can't keep my hands off of you. What do you want?
And it's Woody.
As it always happens. Whenever she screams at the door, it opens up, and it's the wrong person. Usually Woody.
Yeah. Well, I just want you to sign these invoices and be gentle. Woody sells it pretty well.
He does. He thinks he's like, he's like, I don't know where this is going. He's like, either my luck is turning around or I'm just having fun with this. But later, Dr. Crandall comes down from a meeting up at Melville's. Rebecca's at the bar. He asks her for two brandies, and she basically blows him off. She's like, yeah, ask the bartender. And she kind of walks off, and Sam notices her very cold, frosty demeanor towards him. He tells Woody to pour him two glasses of the house brand. And this one, Crandall's like, one seldom gets to sample a good Nigerian cognac.
This is before Hennessy became big, I guess.
must be. And Rebecca tells Sam and Fraser that Crandall kind of hit on her, and they don't really buy it. And when she tries to explain it, she's like, he asked me about my feelings. And they're like, really? Like, the man must be put down or whatever like that. Yeah. They're really kind of coming at her like, okay, you're imagining this. They don't believe her at all. And
the undercurrent, of course, is, oh, you're a woman and you were asked about your feelings.
Right.
There is so much subtext there. It's really difficult in today's light. It really is.
It is. He wasn't being sexual. He was just being clinical, and that this is part of his job. You're overreacting. You're the one, as a woman, you're being hysterical. You know, which is what they do. So she even buys it. She lets them convince her that this was all an overreaction. She was wrong. So she goes. Crandall is sitting at the table by the door. She walks over to him, sits down at the table next to him to apologize for her comments, and Crandall basically plays the victim here and starts to guilt her into saying even that she finds him attractive, so that she, because by basically saying, he's like, I understand you think I'm hideous, I'm gross, disgusting. Why would a woman like you find me attractive? She's like, no, you're attractive. And instantly he's he's like, oh really, that's very nice of you. And it's just like that turn on a dime is just like, because if there was any part in the audience's like viewpoint that, okay, maybe I have some doubts, maybe Rebecca is wrong here, maybe this was an innocent misunderstanding, but when he does that turn, it's like, oh no,
it's almost too good. Later on we'll get into it, and he says that, you know, he's not done this before, that this is the first time. It's moments like this, it's the way he's acting. Yes, this is his job to look at these things and to study this, but he's been practicing this line. He's been practicing this approach. He has to. Sam is not this smooth sometimes.
Right. And it's not like it's a sinister turn when he does that. Oh, really? You don't say. Like, it's it's almost like this, oh, thank you. Like, almost like overly courteous and like, or like thankful and everything like that. Like, he's welcoming. But it's... Yeah,
but in turn turns it sinister too.
Right, exactly. So he starts to, you know, talk about how awkward he is while it was around women, and you know, this whole thing, like, he's not used to this. While, as Rebecca reveals to us, he is rubbing his foot against her leg
under the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. I just, you know, crossed my leg, and I thought that was the table leg." She's like, "You're still doing it."
He says, "I thought it was the table leg, a long, sumptuous leg that goes on forever."
Yeah, like supple leg, the quivering leg that goes on. Yeah. And she's like, "You have a hole in your sock." And he just gives her this, like, smile, like, "Do you like it?" It's so bad.
She gets up so fast on here that she hits her head on the lamp next to it.
Which...
And I don't know if this was planned or not, but she sells it as it fits in the scene perfectly. She's so flustered that she gets up, hits her head, and walks away. And they got the same shot, because later on when he gets up, that lamp is still swinging.
Yeah, if that was blocked, it was blocked like within an inch of their lives, because it looks so natural and so almost accidental, but they just work with it. And it's perfect, because it just adds to her being flustered and just like out of there and just kind of can't get out of there fast enough. And she storms off, and Crandall takes a call from his wife, and Rebecca calls him a hypocrite, and Sam and Fraser kind of whisk her back to the hallway, and they confront her, and she says that Crandall came on to her, and he towed her calf. And they kind of look at each other like, is that a euphemism for something? Like, what is?
Accidentally rubbed you.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Fraser says that Crandall quite literally wrote the book on marital fidelity, and that she is insulting his reputation. And Sam, of course...
Insults the doctor's reputation,
but
and
also,
his own.
Yes, of course.
Which is, again, it's this makes Fraser and then Sam look horrible. Because not only are they... saying, well, you're not only insulting him, but by relationship, you're insulting me too, which is just another tool that's been used against her.
Yeah, it's all sorts of, you know, coming after one man, you're coming after all of us, we have to kind of get into our tribes, and like, if it happened to him, it could happen to me, and all of these horrible things. But to couple that, then Sam comes after her and basically says that, you know, he thinks that she's projecting. And actually, Sam does a nice bit of psychoanalysis here on his part, which I think even, it's way off the mark, but it's astutely put, because Fraser even kind of gives him the thumbs up, like, yeah, that's exactly what it is. He's like, she's projecting because she hasn't had sex in a while, or how does he put it? Like,
you're projecting your frustrations onto someone because it was too long since you had your tires rotated. Going back to backseat Becky.
Yeah, nice catch, yeah. The one other thing that I just wanted to point out here that has nothing to do with anything, but during this scene, Norm and Cliff are playing Battleship.
Yes, it's on my notes right there. I was pausing to take some notes. I paused. I'm like, they're playing Battleship. How awesome is it? Just thinking about Norm and Cliff, thinking about John Ratzenberger and George Wendt, they get paid to sit there and drink near beer and play Battleship. Because they don't have any lines here.
No.
They're just background characters. They're just sitting there having fun playing Battleship.
Exactly.
I remember, I mentioned this before, but John Ratzenberger came to the Washington State Con one year, a few years back, And I went and saw his panel, and he was talking about how much fun that he had, that he got paid to sit with his best friend for years on a bar stool and just goof around and joke with him. And he got paid for that for years. It was the best job in the world.
Yeah, you can imagine. That's so incredible. Yeah. I noticed in the background, I was like, they're not at the bar. They're at the table. What are they doing there? I was like, they're playing a board game. They're playing Battleship.
Yeah,
fantastic.
But she also says that the doctor, he's a lying, hypocritical sleaze who needs to be neutered.
Yes.
Good line. Good line.
At this point, after Crandall's phone call with his wife, he wants to leave because he's obviously upset Ms. Howe, and Sam tries to apologize on her behalf. She's had a very hard couple of life.
Mm-hmm.
And we cut to...
He responds back. I sent some emotional problems there.
Yeah,
it's just, once again, it's adding on, and it. There was a time when, oh, this is funny. They're laughing at women and their emotional problems. But now it feels awkward and icky and wrong. And the laughs are there, but it's just like, no.
Yeah.
No. This is not good.
Right. It's a sitcom. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get anywhere near an actual sexual assault or rape in this case. I mean, that's just not in the world of this show. But this is pretty much why the Me Too movement existed. And kind of like...
Well, and it doesn't even have to go that far. Because what you're doing is... And I'm going to go a broader... I'm going to go a little bit broader on this one than just this. It's the reason why any type of bullying behavior is not good. Because it demeans the person, takes them out of the sense of self, the sense of well-being they have.
Yeah.
This is not a physical attack. This is a mental attack on somebody. And it's questioning who they are. And the rest of the episode actually continues to explore that. They're saying that she's crazy. She's imagining it. It's taking down her self-worth. He may not get lucky with her, but because he's taking out the bricks of this wall, the next guy down the line, he might get lucky.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah. Back to the show as we kind of move to our scene. We move away from Cheers for the rest of the episode. We are now in Crandall's hotel room, and he brings a chambermaid into his hotel room. The chambermaid, in this case, her name is Maria. She is played by the actress Fabiana Udinio. She was Miss Teen Italy when she was 13. Some fans might know her for playing the role of Alada Vagina in Austin Powers' International Man of Mystery. I hope I said that right. Alada Vagina.
I don't think that we're going to get... I don't know. It depends on what kind of rating you've got on the show, because you're getting on the line there a bit. But she has got the most incredible accent. I could not figure it out because I didn't look at her up until afterwards. I couldn't tell if... It was a southern accent. I couldn't tell if it was Middle Eastern. I couldn't tell if it was European. It just bounced all over the place. I was really confused. I was like, oh, okay, I'm starting to get it. Also, she was in Summer School as well.
That was the next one in my notes. She was in a big hit in the Fire and Water Network, apparently, because Rob covered Summer School.
It's a fantastic movie. It's the best movie for whatever year it was out. 87.
Yeah, and Kirstie Alley connection, I think. She was also in Bride of Reanimator. She was in episodes of Designing Women, Quantum Leap, Top of the Heap, Baywatch, The John Larroquette Show, and most recently, the Arnold Schwarzenegger show, FUBAR, which a lot of people I know have seen that, and they recommend it to me. I watched one episode and couldn't get into it, but I mean, I'll give it another shot.
Yeah, I haven't checked that one out yet.
So anyway, he has this brings his chambermaid into the hotel room. He's ordered champagne for both of them. She's with her funny accent. She's like, "I've never been in one of these rooms without my vacuum cleaner running." She's like, "It's so quiet." And she has this line like, "Which." He's got another woman, a chambermaid, in the hotel room that he's giving champagne. And she says she didn't realize she was attracted to him until he convinced, until he pointed it out.
He told her that you sensed it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's like, he has now convinced this poor woman to come back to his hotel. So this is basically what he was trying to do with Rebecca. It worked on a probably less intelligent, less discerning woman in this maid.
Yep.
And it's... Yeah, it's okay. This is so bad.
Yeah.
And then when they have the champagne, she makes the comment, she like bottoms up, and his reaction, it's funny, but it's also, oh, God. Because he's like,
oh, yes. Oh, God, yes.
Oh, God, yes.
he stumbles through it, and then stumbles through it some more, and then ends with this just, oh, I hope so, yes.
This ecstatic, There's a sudden knock at the door. He's like, Maria is like, I can't get caught in here. She runs and hides in the closet. Crandall opens the door, and it's Rebecca standing there. And she doesn't just stand there. She walks right into the room. Mm-hmm. She's like, I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you about what happened. He's like, I don't have time for this. I'm going to meet with somebody. We can do this later. And she's like, okay, well, look, I've got a really bad headache. Can I have some aspirin? And he's like, seriously? She's like, give me 2 aspirin, and then I'll leave you alone. And he's like, okay, fine. So he goes to the bathroom. And conveniently, he's in there for a long time because we need to get some exposition dumped here. Mm-hmm. Because while he is in the bathroom, Rebecca brings Sam into the hotel room, who is very reluctant, doesn't want to be there. And she's like, I'm going to get him to admit that he came on to me. You can overhear it, and this will prove that he's a lech and I'm not a cuckoo. And Sam's like, one thing at a time, Rebecca.
One thing at a time.
So Sam goes to hide in the closet. Now, when he goes in there, we don't see any hint that Maria is in there, but
we know.
So we're just waiting. It's like Chekhov's closet. It's like
there's a beautiful woman in a closet, and Sam's been put in that closet. We don't need any script writer here to tell us what's going to happen. We don't need to see the rest of the episode. We know what's going to happen.
Right. Crandall comes out, he gives her the pills, and he's like, he goes to the door, opens it, he's like, okay, it's time for you to leave. And she's like, I'll leave once you admit that you came on to me. And he tries to put it off. She's like, no, just say it. He's like, fine, I admit it. I came on to you. And she goes, aha.
And Sam doesn't leave the closet.
And the camera framing is perfect on Burroughs' part, because she's on one side, and then that door, that closed closet door, is right beside her, and there's just a lot of space, and you're just waiting. She is waiting for that door to open, and surprise, you're busted.
And the audience knows that door is not going to open. So at this point, she cracks the door. She opens the door a little bit.
Yeah. And she's like, can you say it again a little bit louder?
And it's a great moment. Once again, going back to the blocking, because you see her there, like, say it once again, and you just see these fingers come out and pull the door shut. That's it. That's just these fingers come out and pull the door shut. And then she gets into admitted again, and she looks back, the door's closed.
And she's like, aha! And he's like, aha, what? And she's like, damn it, Sam! And she opens the door. She's like, "What? Get out of here!" And he kind of stumbles out. And he's unkempt. Yeah. He's like fixing his shirt and his collar and everything. He's like, boy, these luxury hotels have great closets.
Did you hear what he said? Well, I sort of had something in my ear. I mean...
And Maria comes out, and she has to rebutton her shirt and everything like that, and it's like, okay. Crandall is like he knows he's busted. When he sees Sam in there, he's just like, wait, she was in there, and he knows what's going on. He can't believe it. And Rebecca's like, you had a woman in there? And she's like, well, come clean, admit this. And he's like, no. And Crandall tries to – he says that she's actually his executive secretary, Ms. Johnson, and he has her there to take dictation for him. And he's like, it's all perfectly honest. And as he opens the door to whisk them out, a new character walks in a tuxedo. He's like, you sent for a violin player?
It's this guy here who's a violinist. I mean – First of all, I always think back to the West Wing episode where they're convincing Leo McGarry to get a violinist to
for his anniversary
his anniversary dinner, and he doesn't do it, but he says, afterwards, you know,
after the first few minutes, there's just a guy in my house.
Whoever thought having a violinist come to your private room to play for you and another woman? Whoever thought that was romantic?
And this violin player, his name is Zoltan. We actually hear that. He's played by Nicholas Miscusi. This is the first of only 3 actor appearances on IMDb. But he also has 3 producer credits for very low budget like films. So I don't know if he ended up doing something else. Maybe he was an actual musician. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very possible that was his thing.
But never played a note here.
He doesn't. So he finally comes clean, and he's like, all right, you caught me. I admit it. This book tour proved too much for me. I my eyes started to wander, and he was going to cheat on his wife. And he's like, but he actually says, no more lies.
Almost I would give this episode some credit if it ended here. Mm-hmm. If it ended here, I think we could probably have saved something.
Right.
You know?
Right. But at that point, we get another knock on the door, and it's his wife, Sally, going, Lawrence! And you just know he has to lie his ass off to get out of this situation. And what position is he going to be putting them in?
Well, he starts off by saying, everybody hide, everybody in the closet. Rebecca, I'm not going in the closet. Oh, come on, Sam. Oh, come on, I'll show you around.
It'll be fun. You'll like it. I'll show you. It's like, Sam is so eager to get back in there.
This closet is huge because now we got four people. Yeah. And Sam's making introductions when everybody comes in.
He's like, what's your name? Zoltan. Zoltan, meet Mary and everything. Yeah. And Valerie Crandall is played by Joanna Barnes. She played Jane in the 1959 Tarzan the Ape Man movie. She was in Spartacus, Goodbye Charlie, and The Parent Trap, as well as episodes of Maverick, Have Gun Will Travel, The Beverly Hillbillies, Hawaii Five-O, Planet of the Apes, Fantasy Island, and Trapper John M.D., among others.
Well, there we go. We got a MASH connection.
So, before she comes in, when Crandall is telling them they have to hide,
oh, yes.
He's like, please, my wife can't find me in here. He's like, I've been faithful to this woman for 15 years, mostly because she's the scariest bitch you'd ever want to meet.
Put a pin in that.
Yeah. I remember I was a kid and I saw this episode live when it first aired. And this was like a big deal. I mean, for airing in 1989, mm-hmm. like, you didn't hear the word bitch in prime time all that often.
No, there's a few things in this that are very risqué.
Yeah, for that
the
that
situation
era.
Like, entirely, this... Right. There's a lot of things in this that seem to be pushing the line for the time period it came out in.
Right. Like, I know, like, I mean, The Simpsons did that a few years later, and it caused a stir then. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, to hear in this case, but... It is also, like, really funny the way it's conveyed and everything like that. So, yeah, Sam gets them all into the closet and everything, and Valerie comes in. She asks what took him so long to answer the door, and he says, it's this plush carpet. I caught my little toe.
Okay.
Again.
Yeah.
She notices the champagne on the table. How could you not? And actually, throughout this whole scene, I was looking, none of them ever bring up the fact that there are two glasses on the table. So he obviously was there with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have that. So they have the champagne. He tries to get her to go out to eat. She insists that he has to wear a coat. So he goes to the closet, announcing his intention, I'm going to the closet to get my coat. And he just kind of cracks the door open just a little bit to kind of reach behind him. So he's blocking the entrance. And you just see a coat being thrust out into his hand. And he takes it. Not noticing that it is very obviously a long blue woman's coat.
I will put money down that it was Rebecca that grabbed that coat and put it out there.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that could have been it. And she's like, I don't remember that coat. He's like, no, I got this for a while. And she makes him put it on. It clearly does not fit. And he's like, oh, that tailor, I'm stopping the payment on that check.
This is the point where the wife comes over and says, okay, well, whoever's in that closet, I want them to come out. She's onto this game. And
whatever she was expecting, it certainly wasn't four people.
Sam,
two men,
Rebecca,
two women,
a
guy
a
in a tuxedo.
I wanted to see a clown and a dog trainer coming out next.
This does feel like a clown car just opening up and all this. And
I want an explanation.
Yeah.
I want it now. I'm going to divorce him and take his reputation and money, and then I'm going to do the same for all of you, and believe me, I can do it.
Yes. The iciness, the hostility with which she just turns and behaves this way, and like actually like ever since she kind of suspected Crandall of something, you can see where his opinion of her comes from.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She's like, somebody explained to me, and Sam is like, we're here to fix the light bulbs. Still, and like, this is the point where Sam doesn't have to be defending this guy, doesn't have to be covering up for this guy at all. There's nothing to gain here.
I will give Sam a pass on this one here. I don't think he's trying to cover for him. I think Sam is just like, I'm scared of her. I'm going to come up with an excuse. Yeah. And also for Sam, he's like, I can't explain this. Yeah.
But Rebecca steps up and she's like, I will be the one person to speak the truth and come clean about this. Again, just that it has to be the woman bringing these accusations to light and the truth to light. And she explains that her husband came, propositioned her at a bar, and she's like, you mean he came out to you or something? He's like, it wasn't necessarily a proposition, but he asked about her feelings. And again, this is where Valerie's like, okay, this other woman is telling you that your husband is being unfaithful to you. And Valerie's going out of her way to protect her husband and defend him and poke holes in her theory. And she's like, well, you know, his field is human sexuality and stuff like that. And she's like, he rubbed his foot against my leg. And Crandall apologizes for that. And she's like, he didn't have a shoe on. And he's like, there was a hole in my $50 hosiery. So how embarrassing was that?
When he talks about that, though, or when she talks about that, Sam, to the side, to the chambermaid, Maria, says she loves talking about this part. she never gets tired of telling people about this.
So, and Rebecca's like, there is a chambermaid in here. And Valerie's like, in a hotel, who would have get like...
Will wonders never cease.
Yeah. And this is when Rebecca gets angry, and now she's going on the offensive. She's like, all right, lady, what about the fiddler? And just pokes her finger in Zoltan's chest and pushes him back. And she's like, what about that? And Crandall's like, well, I was lonely, and I asked him up here to play our song so I could remember you. And she's like, why were the four of us in that closet? And Valerie's like, you tell me. You were in there.
You mean you don't know?
Yeah. And Rebecca's like, oh, I do know. And she throws Crandall's line back at her. It's because you are the scariest bitch we would ever want to meet. And
at this point, Miss Crandall says, and you're a tramp.
Rebecca repeats it, tramp, but she makes it sound like two-syllable words. She's like, tramp? And then Rebecca just loses it and is like ready to take a swing at her, and they have to pull her off. And
the fiddler player puts Rebecca over his shoulder
like a fireman carry to bring her to the thing. And Maria opens the door, and Sam tries to get them out. And Rebecca has her hands on the door frame to hold herself, and she's screaming, "I'm gonna kill him! I'm gonna kill your husband! I'm gonna kill you!" She says, "He's stupid. He's a fraud. He's a psycho."
I'm going to hunt you down and kill you like a dog, and why don't you get some new socks?
That's my favorite part of the threat. Why don't you get some new socks, Buster?
And Sam's got the closing line.
And it is, except for the fact that it goes against our morality and everything we have been discussing at this point, because it's just another nail on her coffin, it is a hilarious line, because he just stops and says, I can explain. She just wanted to convince me that she's not crazy.
And everything to the contrary, now what we've just seen is Rebecca crazy, because the situation has made her crazy. Welcome to Gaslight.
Exactly.
Musical.
Exactly. And it's, yeah, it's funny, but it's also one of those things that's like, I'm not going to say almost. This is more cringeworthy than a lot of Sam's womanizing and flirtations.
Yes.
Because, you know, like, even as much of a hound, like, he's not a predator in that sense. He's never done this maliciously. He's as innocent as it can be. He is flirtatious. He thinks he's bringing joy to both these people. He's not going to try and trick anybody. There's no deceit. This is a terrible thing that systemically, culturally, genderally, like we do to women, and it's just nauseating.
Yeah. I have problems with this because this is also the season finale. Yeah. And in the past, we've had some season finales that have been cliffhangers or something that's moved the overarching storyline. What's Sam's Bar? What's happening with Cheers? Who owns Cheers? What company is owning Cheers? What's going on with Sam and Diane? What's going on with Sam and his relationship? Is there a big bet of trying to get Sam and Rebecca together? There's something that's big and overarching that's going to close out the season and get us through the summer into the next season. This is kind of a dud. There's nothing. This has nothing to do with anybody. If John Cleese even came back, that would have been cool, but that's reaching back to another episode. There's no reason that this needs to be a tentpole episode for a season finale.
And here's the thing. I don't think it was originally supposed to be. And this goes to something that I was talking to John with on the last episode, because they mentioned that this was going to bring back John Cleese's character, and they had to rewrite it. Like, David Lee mentioned that they had this in the production schedule. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily say it was at the end. But in the previous episode, Sisterly Love, which introduced Rebecca's sister, the notes for that one said that that was originally conceived to be the series or the season finale, and it was going to end on a cliffhanger of Sam proposing to Rebecca's sister, but they didn't think that was in character. They wanted to change that. I also think it would have been too similar to when to like the previous engagement finales and stuff like that, and when Diane was going to marry Sam's brother in the end of season one, and they kind of played that hand a couple of times. So I wonder if these two episodes might have been reversed at some point as originally conceived, that this would have been a penultimate episode, and then the next episode introducing Rebecca's sister would have been the finale, which
possibly I think that this season it would have been a lot better if they had just moved a lot of things around and put the Woody Kelly episodes near the end and have those be part of the bridge, especially with, you know, Woody, you know, like, is she going to like me? Is this, you know, rich girl going to like? That would have been fun, because then you're kind of moving the focus a little bit onto somebody else, really getting into the ensemble nature of the cast. And that would have been an interesting thing to bring forward and get off a little bit of the Sam love triangle for a bit.
Right. This is one of the few, like, as a finale, as you put it, like a tentpole episode, a significant episode, isn't about Sam trying to get with Rebecca or anything like that. Like, that's not a factor in that, even though it's very much a Sam and Rebecca-dominated episode. Like, most of the cast disappears for the second half.
I was actually trying to think about what changes.
Like, if they had actually exposed, if they revealed at the end that Valerie, like, knew that, like, she, like, basically, like, she had confirmation, like, because I think she does know. She's just trying to save face for herself in front of the others, in front of public. That's why she gangs up on Rebecca. But I'm sure once that door closed and they were alone, she knew, and she threw it back in her husband's face. And I wonder if, like, if seeing that might have made this better, but I don't think so, because it's not about, I mean, to one extent, it should be about punishing him, but it's also supposed to be about validating Rebecca's hurt and her pain and the what she is experiencing. And they don't do that. They do the opposite of that. They inflame it to the point where she does lash out and behave hysterically as they accuse her of being.
And she's the butt of the joke at the end.
Right, right. Which, yeah, it's cruel and unfair. Mm. And it's hopefully like the thing that we have made strides against in the last couple of years in particular. Certainly in the last 35 years or so, but
yeah, it's not one of the best ones. This is not one of the best ones at all. There are some funny lines in it.
I still laugh a lot at it. I can separate myself from it. I can say I hate to use this like a defense, like it's a product of its time, but I also have to understand the context in which this was.
Yeah.
So I still think this is a funny episode. There's a lot of good performance-wise and good jokes in here. The overall feeling of the episode is not good, and the payoff, the way it treats the main character, is kind of disgusting.
Yeah.
But
we're still going to follow the show. We're still going to watch it. We're still going to enjoy it. I mean, this is something that the only content that's out a long time ago.
Right.
We can
the only thing we can do is say that this was decades ago and we've learned.
Right. We can have a frank conversation, point out where it's wrong, say that there is better ways to have an episode like this. We aren't necessarily writers in how to do it, but there are better things that we can do with this episode and really make it a good teaching moment too. But we aren't there. This isn't that time. This is what we've got. So we have to evaluate it on what it is.
Right. Right. Sorry, folks. Sorry to end the season on that note.
We'll try to make the rest of this a little funnier as we end out. I promise.
When I get to the feedback episode, I'm going to talk about a Mickey Mouse special, so maybe that'll be a little bit funnier. But, For Norm's tab, counting as he mentioned that he had three beers poured by Carla, so he actually, I give him credit for five beers in this episode, which brings his series total right now up to 694, which means he had 107 beers in this season, and this was a shorter season comparatively.
That's my boy. Yeah. Yeah.
Who was your employee of the week?
I have to give it to Rebecca. She had to put up a lot with a lot this episode. I think we like seeing her do the crazy, frantic Rebecca. We get to see it at the end. She's able to sell it. She's able to sell a lot of good looks throughout the episode as well. Mm-hmm. And there's a few times that she is selling it on her acting skills more than actually the words that are written on the page. So I really appreciate her for that. The physical stunt that she did, the entire interaction with her in her office. I'm going to have to give it to Rebecca.
Yeah. As Fraser said, I don't feel good about this. I have to give it to Crandall.
Mm-hmm.
He's the villain, but in terms of a performance, in terms of funny jokes, what he does to this, is his behavior unconscionable? It absolutely is. But I'm glad that you gave it to Rebecca, because I was thinking about splitting the difference, but I was like, okay, mm-hmm. You got Rebecca. She's protected. We got that. She deserves it for that reason. I'm going to say Crandall. I feel bad about that.
Yeah, I was looking at all the guys in this episode, and all of them had some good lines, but I'm like, I can't in good conscience do that. I can't. So I will appreciate, and I do respect, the acting that he does, the looks that actor pulls off. He comes off as sleazy. He comes off as... You know, some of his lines, he uses them for funny extent. I mean, the bottoms up, oh, God, yes. There's a lot that he puts into that one.
Yeah.
But I can respect it. Can respect it.
As Daria's friend Jane said, it makes us feel dirty, the bad kind of dirty. What was your home run for the episode?
I'm going to go with Rebecca's rant at the end, because it was a pretty good payoff where she gets in the other lady's face. She says, because you are the scariest bitch we would ever want to meet, and then I'm going to hunt you down and kill you like a dog, and why don't you get some new socks? It's a good stretch right there of her just unloading everything that she has put up with in this episode. So that was my home run.
That explosion is really, really good. So my runner-up is when they're at the table and she's like, there's a hole in your sock. And he just gives her that, like it? Like that horrible smile. Like, is this turning you on? It's like, oh my God, she's so grossed out. But I think this wasn't on my list until you pointed it out and I forgot how funny it is. But I think the best actual moment is when she opens the closet door so that they can hear, and you just see Sam's fingers just pulling the closet door shut.
Very subtle. Very subtle.
It's like the most subtle, betrayal, because he is just like, I know I'm here to be your backup. I am here specifically to listen to this conversation, but I'm going to play with a lot of China here.
It's not even that he's trying to betray her. This is Sam reduced to... He's Sam. You put him in that position, Sam's going to be Sam. I want to hate him for it, but at the same time, he's only Sam.
Because it's also confirmation that we knew exactly what was happening in there.
Yeah.
Because like you said, we don't see her in the closet. We see him going in there. We know they're both in there. We're like, we know what's going to happen. And when that door closes again, it's like, yep.
Sam can take most women up to racing speed instantly. This chambermaid was already primed.
Yeah. A complicated episode, but I feel good about this podcast episode. I'm glad you were here to help me talk about this and break it down with some nuance and maturity. Hopefully the listeners...
I would just like to remind all the listeners that all comments and anger and derisions that you want to send, please send them to Ryan Daly, care of the Fire and Water Network.
I actually sincerely endorse that. I very in particular would like to hear some more female comments and female perspectives on this episode and anything that we might have left out. I'm sure we did. But yeah, just anything else, any thoughts and feelings about this episode. But until we get that feedback and until I address that, Rick, thank you once again for coming on the show again. Where else can people find you in the podcastosphere?
I have a little podcast called Unpacking the Power of Power Pack, which I host with my co-host, Jeff. And he owns nothing but socks with a hole in them. He says that he keeps these socks to remind him that he came from humble beginnings, but he plans to rule the world by using the anger he feels at having cold feet. Also, I want to plug this out there. My daughter has a comic strip that she is creating and we are sharing on our website. Just look for Jeff and Rick Present Tales of Tales. My 13-year-old daughter is doing a really great job with these, and they're really good. They're really fun. They're really simple little comic strips.
And none other than veteran comic book writer and legend Louise Simonson is a fan of this comic strip. So if you needed a better endorsement, go check these out.
It absolutely floors me whenever she likes Facebook. It just absolutely floors me.
Wheezy likes it. You got it?
Wheezy likes it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And Rick, enjoy your trip to Costa Rica. Thanks again, and thanks all of you out there who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FWPodcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Lawrence, guess who?
It's my wife. Hide!
I'm not going in a closet.
Oh, come on. You'll enjoy it. I'll show you around.
Please, please, you must. My career is at stake. So is my marriage. I've been faithful to this woman for 15 years, mostly because she's the scariest bitch you ever want to meet.